Blog Talk Radio.
Hey there, it's Annabelle. I'm back. I am thrilled about today's show. I've been wanting to talk to Stephen for some time. He is the president and founder of Rebuild Democracy, that's based in New Hampshire. And as I mentioned in this description of the show, he's been working on building a left-right-center alliance on term limits, gerrymandering, and clean elections. And I'm really excited to talk to him about his organization and kind of what he's learned so far in his journey. Welcome, Stephen. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, Annabelle. It's great to be here with you.
Great. Well, I want to start by asking you a little bit about your background. I know you've had quite a lot of experience with movement building, and you've been involved with Heritage and Cato, and you've been a teacher. It seems like you've done a lot of things to kind of take you to this moment. So can you say a little bit about your background?
Yeah, in a way, maybe I am sort of a rare breed, because there's not too many conservatives out there who are really focused on reform. But as you say, I do have a background in it. During the 1990s, I was a resident scholar at U.S. Term Limits. And I approached these issues as an historian. I've finished coursework and a doctorate in early American history. So I look at election reform as a conservative might, from the point of view of the founding fathers. But although I'm a conservative, I appreciate that it's absolutely necessary that we unite as a people, as conservatives, progressives, centrists, vegetarians, what have you, to find solutions together. So that's my story and my approach to it.
Yeah, I noticed that you describe yourself as being an economic and constitutional conservative, a foreign policy moderate, and a liberal on most social issues. So you really are a hybrid.
Well, I think politics should be more like a Chinese menu than a French one. My wife is French, and we love to eat in France, but it's a set menu where where everything is already set for you, the appetizer, the main course, and the dessert. Of course, I think I tend to think that nobody is thinking really in an open-minded fashion if they're right down the line on one side or the other. We need to all work at being independent thinkers.
Mm-hmm. But you feel more or less at home with the Republican Party.
Yeah, I mean, I wish Paul Ryan were running for president, for example, or Mitch Daniels. Mm-hmm. I'm very comfortable, and I think that my foreign policy views aren't really conservative. I think they are conservative. I don't think neoconservative really is conservative. So that's a debate on a completely other different topic. And then a lot of libertarians, of course, view social issues differently than social conservatives do. So people have often talked about, you know, how diverse the Democratic Party is and the progressive movement is. I would argue that the conservative movement is actually intellectually more diverse. Whenever you can have social conservatives and libertarians under the same tent, that's a pretty diverse group.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah, it is a very diverse group. I'm curious to kind of hear more about how you came to be the president of Rebuild Democracy. And you did found the organization, right?
Yes, with a lot of help from Jeff McClain, who is policy director at Americans for Campaign Reform. So Jeff comes out of this as from a clean elections point of view, and I come to it from a term limits point of view. Mm-hmm. And I was active in my college Republican group, and Jeff was involved in the leader in the Young Democrats. Mm-hmm. In many respects, Annabelle, our three reform solution proposal, term limits, clean elections, and gerrymandering, it represents a deal of sorts between the right and the left. The conservatives get their favorite reform, which is term limits, and progressives get their favorite reform, clean elections. So, and by conservatives and progressives here, I mean the activist set, the people who are really involved in politics. Because when you look below the activist level, what you find is all three of these reforms have a lot of popular support among ordinary voters who aren't necessarily on fire for politics, but do care about these things.
Mm-hmm. So is my understanding then that with ending gerrymandering, that's something that where there is actually bipartisan support. It's not a left or a right issue.
Well, you know, it's funny. There's actually not a lot of polling data on on gerrymandering. And I think because it's almost a no-brainer. Everyone just assumes that ordinary citizens hate the idea of gerrymandering. Everyone assumes that people believe that voters should pick their politicians and politicians should not pick their voters. Mm-hmm. So there's not a lot of data on it, but certainly anecdotally, if just talking to folks, nobody thinks that congressmen should be able to draw their own districts so they can be perpetually reelected. So that that reform is in the mix just because it seems like a no-brainer if you live outside the political establishment.
So you're more passionate about term limits than clean elections.
Well, I you know, if you asked me that question in the 1990s, I would say yes. But today, the problems are so severe. Mm-hmm. The founding fathers favored a layered defense against corruption, a system that we think of as checks and balances. And I think our solution needs to be layered as well. So clean elections, term limits, an end to gerrymandering, the three reforms together constitute a layered defense, a layered solution against the corruption of our system. So I don't necessarily need to pick one or the other. I believe we need them all. And each reform speaks to one or more different malignancies that are eating away at our political system. And sometimes the reforms speak to overlapping malignancies. Mm-hmm. All three are necessary. And politically, the package is a way for conservatives and progressives to stand together. And if we don't stand together, this is not going to get done. So that's an essential point.
Mm-hmm. Now, when did you start the organization?
We've only been going at this project for a little bit over a year, and our website, rebuilddemocracy.org, has only been up for 6 months. So, and because we're outside the Beltway, and I should say that I've been out of politics and public policy for a long time, so we almost have begun from a standing start. So I'm very proud of what we're accomplishing in a fairly short amount of time, and I expect big things in the coming year.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
Okay. Now, when you and Jeff, I guess, when you were choosing these three goals here, clean election, gerrymandering, congressional term limits, were there other things that you were considering? I'm just kind of curious about how you settled on these three things.
Well, if we just back up a minute, Annabelle, the real goal here is is to bring the left and the right to the table. To negotiate these reforms. In our last conversation, you and I talked a lot about the importance of process. Mm-hmm. You're the one that brought up just how important that is. So,
I do go on about that a bit.
Yeah. Well, you're not wrong. No, it's because there's a lot of people out there with a lot of great ideas and strongly held views about things. But if we're going to develop something that is constitutionally and politically powerful, then we have to be very deliberative about the approach. So on the one hand, when we say we're going to have a clean election system, we're not specifying what kind of clean election system it will be. That is for the right and the left to negotiate. It might mean the Fair Elections Now Act. It might mean a voucher for every voter. It might mean a blind trust. It might mean free media time in lieu of media corporations paying taxes. It might mean a combination of these things. Mm-hmm. But we begin from at a point where conservatives and progressives agree. And that point is this. Our elected officials should not be permitted to take money from the same interests they regulate. It is an inherent conflict of interest. We're a nation of self-evident truths. This is a self-evident truth. They should not be taking money from the same interests they regulate. We all agree. So we sit down at the table and we build a new system together. That's the vision behind this, and that's the goal.
Oh, I didn't realize that actually. Okay, so because I was going to ask you more detail about more about what you had in mind for term limits, but why don't I hold off on that and kind of get into the meat of this thing, because I know that a lot of coffee party people have kind of had some experience at this point in trying to bring people together at the local level and at the national level, and finding it quite challenging, I mean, and rewarding and interesting, and it's just a cocktail of different experiences. And I'm like really eager to hear your experiences being I'm sure you've already had these discussions already, and your partner is a Democrat, you're a Republican. I mean, what is the biggest challenge for you in building this kind of alliance?
Partisanship. Mm-hmm. Everyone suspects this is a plot hatched by the other side,
mm-hmm.
and that makes it very difficult. Now, our strategy to get around that, mm-hmm. is to be sure that we've anchored the coalition in every state firmly on either side. In other words, we want a true progressive, a move-on type org progressive to lead the coalition from the left in every state, and a real Tea Party conservative on the right. Because if you have that, then no one's ever going to be able to accuse anyone of being partisan or this being a left-wing or right-wing conspiracy. When you try to develop a left-center alliance or a right-center alliance, we're so polarized today that those centrists always get peeled off, and you don't have enough political power behind the proposal to succeed. And the reason that you have to have that political power is because the Washington, D.C. establishment is so entrenched. When I was don't let me ramble here. Interrupt if you have questions.
Okay, I will interrupt. We have some people calling, so I'll probably interrupt you. Go ahead.
Okay, I just want to point out that in the 1990s, the Republicans betrayed the term limits community on term limits. They never intended to pass term limits. Similarly, Nancy Pelosi had promised to vote on the Fair Elections Now Act, and there was no vote. So both sides have been betrayed by the establishment. They really do stand together to protect their own privileges, this nexus of special interests and career politicians. So it's up to us on the outside to see what's going on and shake hands, even if we have to hold our noses at the same time.
Well, I mean, I'm just curious. You know, I feel like partisanship the same thing as lack of trust? Because, you know, I think the way the initial thing you said was there's suspicion that there's some hidden agenda going on here.
Yeah.
And I feel that's a little bit different from just partisanship. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I think the two are related. They probably are a
mm-hmm.
little bit different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But we're so polarized. Right and left. We're so tribal in our politics, and the media, of course, is driving this. It is a very difficult thing to overcome. Here in New Hampshire, I'm not going to tell you who our two chairs are, but it's been very heartwarming for me to see how much they like each other. Their politics are very different, but meetings end with hugs at this point. and we can
that's
do that.
That's the goal, right? That's your hidden agenda. You want people to hug.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is a good sign. I mean, that we don't, you know, that we can respect each other enough even when we disagree, mm-hmm. which of course is what the coffee party is its mission is all about.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I want to throw out another strategic question that could contradict or conflict with what you're saying, because I feel like there are two ways to do this. You know, one is to go to the people who are supposedly on the extreme, and if there's a linear spectrum here, people who are on the Tea Party or Move On, as you said, and get them to work together. Or we try to bring in engaged people who actually feel very disengaged right now from the political process, who don't identify with Move On or the Tea Party, who are just regular folks who may have conservative views, may not, may have progressive views, may not. Sometimes they just, they're very open to ideas and receptive to ideas. I mean, another way of calling them is they are the silent majority, and they're constantly ignored by politicians and organizers and activists. So I guess that's a concern I have. You know, leaving them out?
I don't think so. I think when those people see that these two sides that are usually yelling at each other are suddenly working together, that those people in the middle will say, "Wow, that's refreshing. That's different. What these people are saying must really be important for them to put down their anger and their hostility, and find common ground." So I think, you know, for the radical left right coalition will attract those people because it will be so refreshing and so different. And I also think it will be a big news story if we can organize for our first wave. We'd like to organize three states. If we could get more, if your listeners are wondering what they can do, they can reach out to Tea Party groups and Coffee Party and MoveOn.org groups in their state and try to help us broker these deals. But if we can launch with three or four states, I think exactly the people that you're talking about have been so turned off by all the partisanship, because let's face it, that's a lot of the reason that they're so disaffected. I mean, that and a sense of powerlessness. They'll say, "Wow, here's something that's really different and exciting. Maybe there's something here. Maybe there's some hope after all."
Okay. No, I would certainly be eager to see that. Do you have the three to four states in mind? I guess New Hampshire is one.
Well, to tell you the truth, I'm going. We're a little group, so I'm going to where we can have our best existing contacts and existing infrastructure, where it'll be the easiest to do. And, and frankly, it's much easier to organize the left than it is the right, because the Tea Party is truly diffuse and bottom up. They deliberately don't have any leaders at the top. Their leaders are mouthpieces for a consensus from below. So it's difficult to organize the Tea Party. It's like herding cats. So I would say that states where we get a good conservative partner will focus on those, because it won't be as difficult to bring in the progressives.
Well, again,
I think it's a structure. I feel that progressives have empowered leaders. I mean, for example, on the Coffee Party, I know who to call. I mean, I'm on this call with you or Eric. But Tea Party groups don't have that kind of structure. You and I attended Larry Lessig's Con, the Constitutional Convention Conference, and I listened to Mark Meckler talking to a couple of Tea Party activists from Harvard, and he was pointing out that he could not make a move. He could not endorse candidates. He couldn't do anything without all of this consensus from below. I mean, there was no press there. This was in the speaker's room, and I was just listening, and I found it quite fascinating.
Okay, so I want to kind of get to some of the callers here. I think this is Barb Smith at 404 number. Hi, you're on the air. Is this Barb? Hi.
Hello? Hello?
Hi. Yeah, hi. You're on the air.
Do
you have a question?
I didn't know I was in the prompt.
Okay.
Hi. No, that hi, how are you guys doing? I was listening intently, and when you were saying hello, I didn't know it was for me. So anyway, hi.
Welcome aboard, Bob.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Do you have any thoughts?
Oh, I do. I do. Sometimes I don't call in because I think sometimes I get long-winded. I listen to what you're saying, what you guys are talking about. It's absolutely a wonderful premise. My problem with our process, and I totally support the line that the Coffee Party puts out. I mean, it's definitely the way to go. My problem with our process is, I guess, Number one is the propaganda issue. You know, we are a world of propaganda. Sometimes the polarization is more about misinformation than it is about anything else. You know, it is. I was reading something today, for example, about a silly thing, but 25 people who thought Little Kim was dead because it was put on Twitter. You know, it is amazing. Yeah, mm-hmm. It is amazing how we fall into traps.
Uh-huh.
And in politics, it happens so much. I think the Tea Party is a lot more guilty of this lately, just lately, than other so-called polarized areas. But everybody's been guilty of it. I mean, I tend to say we're living the Tokyo Rose era again. You know.
So let me ask you something. So you're speaking to the problem of, you know, misinformation and what you see as propaganda out there as having a negative influence on overall our political process. Is that what you mean?
Well, overall on people educating themselves to fix our political process, I guess, is where I'm going with that.
Mm-hmm.
The misinformation, people jump on it.
Uh-huh.
You have, you know, I can another example of this, in my opinion, is the ridiculousness of the birther issue. You know, I consider myself a fairly intelligent man, and I've known my entire life that, you know, I cannot, you know, to me, let's just say I believe conspiracies. Well, the only way for that conspiracy to work is if, like, for example, every member privately of the FBI, the CIA, the Secret Service, or anybody else, just privately, are all supporters of Obama and President Obama and the fact that, well, he may not be, but I don't care because I like him. That's absurd. Now, even though those agencies may not, in fact, be in charge of that issue, let's say, it doesn't mean that somebody that has the ability wouldn't have looked. It's just absurd. And yet you have a situation and a group of people, very, very influential, very powerful people, who actually ride this thing. To what end? You know, of course, the end is that they want to get rid of that particular individual out of the presidency. Our most disrespected president of all time.
Okay, you know what? Let me have Stephen respond to some of that. Okay, Stephen.
Well, Bob, do you think it's fair to say that a lot of this is a distraction? Isn't that what it really is?
Absolutely. Oh, God.
A distraction. Yeah, I think we could agree on that. And the reason that I'm so interested in these reform issues, and I suspect, Annabelle, you chime in here if you think this is right,
mm-hmm.
that is because the issues of corruption and dysfunction, they're at the very source of the problem, the root of the problem. Larry Lessig likes to quote Henry David Thoreau, who says, "There are 1,000 hacking at the branches of evil to every one who is striking at the root." And the root problems are Annabelle will love this, process problems of issues of process in our system, entrenched incumbency, the buying and selling of legislation, politicians more focused on their next reelection and their political power than they are the next generation. So I would argue that all this other stuff is just a distraction, and that you know, we need to just sit down calmly. We need to engage with each other, but we need mm-hmm. to think. Okay, what are the underlying problems here? What are the real problems? Why have we become so mm-hmm. partisan? Why don't we talk to each other anymore? And I think a lot of that is rooted in our political dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
James Madison and his fellow founding fathers, when they were creating this country, they were really concerned that our lawmakers might come to serve factions, and by that they meant special interests, narrow interests, short-term interests, and they created a whole system of checks and balances to make sure, to try to get lawmakers to think in broad terms and long-term time horizons, not to serve these narrow interests. And the reforms that we're talking about are so important because today, all of the incentives, virtually all of them, are for the narrow and the short term, and the special interests. And as our friend Larry Lessig likes to say, neither side, whether you're progressive or conservative, can get what they want, given these structural failing. So all this stuff about birth certificates, yada yada, it's a distraction.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so okay, this is a subject that's near and dear to my heart because, and this is why Coffee Party is kind of in playing. In some ways, what I want to call metapolitics, like how we engage in politics, period, you know, not just the issues, right? And I think this is where you and I have something in common, which is that one of the reasons why I think our democracy is failing is because we cannot talk to each other. And whether or not it's because of the partisanship that exists, whether or not it's because of the propaganda and misinformation and politics division. But the bottom line is we can't talk to each other. And so, I mean, in a way, it's like it's sad that we would celebrate the fact that you can get a move-on person or a two-party person can sit down, or that we had conservatives and progressives and Tea Party and Coffee Party all at con, where the fact that we even find that remarkable and we celebrate it, it says something about the fact that we're extremely divided and polarized in a way that's very personal and emotional and psychological, that goes way beyond partisanship and politics to me, that it really gets to, it affects kind of our sense of self and our sense of, you know, well-being. It's pretty, I don't know, I just feel like it affects us at such a deep level. And so I guess that's kind of where I am, is like, how do we even just begin to get people to talk? Because without that dialogue, it's very hard to have a functioning democracy, even if you get the process right.
Yeah, you know, Joan Blades, who is a founder of MoveOn.org and who your executive director, well, actually I'd exchanged emails with her before, but I'm now involved with her program, Living Room Discussions. Is it Living Room? Do you know this one, Annabelle?
Yeah, Living Room series. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm trying to remember the exact website, but you know, she's working on exactly this kind of process where we can once again become friends again. In fact, the way that she approaches it is the same way we did, without having consulted with each other, that you begin by bringing people of diverse backgrounds and political views into the room together, but you don't start with politics. You start with talking about yourselves and your lives and your dreams and your fears and your life, and so you get to know your neighbors as people, and from there, slowly and gingerly, you know, you move into politics and values. But I think that program, I'm looking forward to working with Joan on that. We're going to design an election reform, political reform set of questions, and I'm trying to get a little synergy going with her group and ours.
Yeah, it's called, the URL is livingroomconversations.org.
Right. And while we're on important URLs, we are rebuilddemocracy.org. Please
yes.
visit.
Yes,
can I ask you a question, Annabelle?
Yes, of course.
Because I know the Coffee Party has a major emphasis on on corporate personhood. And and this is problematic for conservatives. So I wonder if we can just game this a little bit.
Uh-huh.
What if we say we take away corporate personhood, and most of us agree that corporations really aren't people, what are the implications for that for election reform? What does that mean? What happens then?
What happens if we get rid of the whole notion, or about extending constitutional rights to corporations?
Well, either.
So basically the problem is that we have extended the First Amendment rights to corporations, and coupled with the fact that money is considered speech.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like it's a combination of the two that's really problematic, you know. And so that's why in Citizens United ruling, it's like I think it's hard for me to just take apart corporate personhood from sort of the rest of it. The fact that that's how we're interpreting First Amendment, and that does affect our campaign finance laws. So First Amendment rights trumps other campaign finance laws. So you can't have these laws and restrictions because you're infringing upon First Amendment rights. And then, therefore, you are then leading the way for, you know, multinational corporations to have unlimited anonymous donations to, you know, super PACs and 501c4s and, you know, and it completely floods the campaign process with donations that are not accounted for.
Well, can we just game this a little bit? So let's say we agree that corporations do not have First Amendment rights, which I think, which means that government does have the right to suppress a certain kind of political speech. Let's put that aside for a minute, and any negative aspects to that. But let's just say that corporate influence is so great that we need to do something. So corporations can no longer play a role in politics. What about the directors of the corporation or the officers or their spouses or contractors? Would we be in any way affecting their ability to pool their resources and engage in politics?
I mean, I think the fact that there are limitations to personal donations in that they should be accounted for and disclosed. As long as there are restrictions and there's disclosure, then they should be treated like any other individual. It's when you have CEOs taking corporate money without even shareholders having any input and then funneling that into campaigns and anonymously again, that's where there's real moral and procedural problems, right? And so, I mean, it's not about restricting someone just because he's a CEO or is part of a corporation. No, I mean, many of us are parts of corporations. That's not the problem. It's just, and I'm not saying corporations should have any rights. Of course they should have rights.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about First Amendment rights interpreted in this way for corporations so that the end outcome is there's unlimited anonymous donations. That's a problem, right?
Right. I mean, I guess, first, I think we all agree, conservatives and progressives, that corporations should not be able to buy the government. They should not be able to influence politics.
That's what I wanted.
We agree.
You can end the show now.
Yeah. No, I mean, I couldn't agree more. And so my fear is, on the one hand, from a policy point of view, we haven't really solved the problem because directors and employees and their spouses and their grandmothers and their aunts and their babysitters and all those people can still give money, and their interests are all tied to the corporation, that on the one hand, we really haven't solved the problem. And then on the other hand, we've given government a new power, the power to control a certain kind of political speech. When I was a boy, I remember we used to watch these ACLU films about the Nazis being allowed to march through Skokie. Did you ever see that, those films?
I haven't Maybe seen so. The films, but I've read a lot about that march.
Yeah. And we decided, I guess it was propaganda, but they won me over. We decided that the right to free speech, the right to not let the government have the power to control any kind of political speech was so sacred, and giving the government the power was so dangerous that we would permit the most unwanted kinds of speech because of the sacred nature of the First Amendment. So on the one hand, we're going to be watering down the First Amendment. On the other hand, I fear with this approach of ending corporate personhood and its implications for election reform that we're not really solving the problem. So, you know, there's a reason that and for conservatives, this is a big issue. This is a big issue because I want to just jump on something you said, because I think in one of the comments you made, there is the possibility for a really good solution, something you said. You said that the corporations can take these political actions, run these ads, support these candidates, and you said, without the support of shareholders. What if, Annabelle, that for a corporation to make any kind of political action, to support a candidate or to engage in political messaging, they had to have the support of a shareholder vote, of all the shareholders?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and disclosed. And in fact, there is something now moving in Congress mm-hmm. called the Shareholders Protection Act that mm-hmm. I'm helping to lobby for. So, so there are definitely remedies, but I think it is a constitutional problem, Stephen, mm-hmm. that we have interpreted free speech in this way, and it's leading to this kind of outcome. But but before we continue this great conversation, I just want to check in with some of the callers.
Okay.
So everyone who's calling in, could you guys push one if you want to be in the queue to speak or ask questions? Otherwise, I don't know if you're calling to ask questions or you're just listening in. So push one. Okay, so we have a caller, 607 number. Hi there. You have a question or comment?
Hi. Yeah, I'm not right on the topic that you're doing right this minute. about corporations. I was going back to gerrymandering.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that the geographical basis for representation at the state level is problematic. It's just really old. And I'm interested in proportional representation. And I think that gerrymandering actually is a real blunt instrument for accomplishing that. And I don't know if anybody else has looked at it that way.
Oh, I think proportional representation is something we really ought to consider. Part of the reason we chose our three reforms is because of the public consensus and relative understanding behind them and the power of the three ideas. But I think once we get the left and the right to the table, there's a lot of other things we want to talk about. And proportional representation is one of them. I don't think you're wrong. One of my favorite ones is another one that I'd like to discuss is radically expanding the House of Representatives. The founding fathers never intended that there be more than 60,000 people per congressman. Today we have almost 700,000. So, you know, there's a lot of interesting reforms that we need to discuss that could go forward individually as individual constitutional amendments. But first step is to get everybody to the table. Get our goal is to get a respected national chair on the left and a respected national chair on the right. First, we deal with our three reform package, and then we begin to look at some of these other issues and frame them if they're worthy, or even if we're not exactly sure if they're worthy, do the best we can with them and try to get them onto the states to be discussed.
When you find the people that will be at this table, how did they get there?
Well,
they get elected?
They're not. I'm looking for someone on the left who's generally trusted in that community, and I have a pretty good idea who I'd like, and somebody on the right as well. And I guess it would be nice if our little organization could personally hold a national election to pick these people, but that's not the way, you know. It's just it has to be realistic. So,
well, if you could, would you do it with instant runoff voting or some such voting?
Oh, instant runoff's another great idea. Yeah, I mean, it would save a lot of money, and I don't think the Republican and Democratic Party should be privileged in any way. So you know, that's something we need to look at. Fair vote is a lot of these good ideas. You find them on that site, Fair Vote.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think we need to consider all of this, but we are focused on our three issues because they're big and they're easy and they're understood and the consensus already exists. But it doesn't mean that we have to stop there.
Okay. Thanks, Barb, for your question.
Thank you.
Okay.
Sure.
So, there are all these great ideas. And again, I guess what I would like to see happen is, and I mentioned this to you before, is, you know, what I think needs to happen is for us to be transpartisan, not in the sense of just getting everyone for every party in the room together, but to get people to transcend partisanship so they can see us and see each other and talk to each other as individuals. You know, so I'm a little concerned about the idea of bringing people with such strong brands, political brands, and saying, okay, let's get them to agree, and then that were in imply that everyone else in between were also agree. I'm a little concerned about that framework.
Well, I would say this: we're not bringing people together over, say, trying to bring people together over healthcare or over the size of the government. There's lots of polling data to suggest that we're really close to a consensus on these issues
mm-hmm.
as a people.
Mm-hmm.
So we're really, really close, and it's the partisanship that's making us fail to see how close we are. I think that by saying let's all work together, let's not be partisan. Maybe that's not as motivational as saying, look, here's a bunch of places where we can agree.
Mm-hmm.
If we find that we can work together in this one area, maybe we can work together in some other areas, or maybe we can't, and maybe that's okay.
Right. Yeah. But here's a poll for you. Okay. 80% of people disapprove of Citizens United ruling, supposedly, right? It's a vast majority of people. When you say conservatives, I'm assuming you're referring to the 20% who don't mind or who approve of Citizens United, right?
But
so why should
yeah.
they hold the entire 80% hostage because they represent a party? You know, you're still ignoring the majority here.
Well,
right? Let me just finish.
Please.
What my concern is, when you say partisan, you're presumably talking about Republican Democratic parties, but we know that the growing trend is the 40% plus people who now do not identify with either party, who consider themselves independent. They don't have a party. So
mm-hmm.
who's going to represent them? How are you going to engage them when they're not interested in becoming part of any party? They don't see themselves being represented by Tea Party or Move On, and don't want to have anything to do with them.
I would say that those people, correct me if you think I'm wrong, consider the system broken, which is why they don't participate.
But Stephen, everyone considers the process broken. You saw, you know, I don't know if you were there when I gave my speech at Con.
Mm-hmm.
I asked people to raise their hand if they believe the process was not broken. I mean, no one raised their hand except for one guy. Everyone, left, right, center, everyone basically agreed that the process is broken. Okay, so it's
these,
not just
these,
the 40%.
These reforms are specifically designed to fix the process, which is what we hope will motivate those people. These are reforms to rebuild the system, and they're not left and they're not right.
Mm-hmm.
So that is my hope that those people will say, okay, finally someone
mm-hmm.
Is trying to do something that will fix the system, and they're not mm-hmm. approaching this from a polemical way. And here's some
yeah.
proof, because we got MoveOn.org and we got Tea Party people both trying to do this.
Right. No, I understand that. I mean, I understand your strategy there. I guess I'm just worried about the language of having two chairs representing two radical sides.
Maybe we need a centrist in each coalition as well. Or you know, maybe that's...
Or independent. Not centrist. Independent.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. Whatever you want to... I mean, the funny thing about being independent, most everyone considers themselves an independent thinker. I mean, I don't know anyone who says, no, I'm not an independent thinker. Everyone.
Well, very few people are registered independent. Not very few.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're not registered independent. I'm talking about people who are actually registered independent.
Yeah. Well,
they're not necessarily centrist.
A lot of progressives and conservatives are registered independent because they feel that they're alienated from their own, you know, from the Democratic and Republican political establishments. I want to get back to one issue on the Citizens United thing, because I think it's a real problem. A lot depends how you phrase that polling question, which is, of course, is true of all polling questions. If you pointed out in that question that this would involve some sort of compromise of the First Amendment, you would not get 80%. I cannot support that. I cannot support giving the government the power to control any kind of political speech. It's just
But do you think money is speech?
I think the ability for the government to be able to say that anyone or anything, any entity can, or any collection of citizens cannot purchase media to say something, I think that is a form of censorship. And it is a very dangerous precedent. I think I share your concerns about corporations buying and selling influence. There are other ways to fix this problem without giving the government the power to control speech.
But you're giving people unlimited power by giving them. You're talking about unrestricted anonymous donations. That's the interpretation.
Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't. If we can put enough money into clean elections, it won't matter. What election history shows us is if a candidate has enough money, it doesn't matter how much the other side has. For example, Corzine and Christie in New Jersey. Corzine outspent Christie by a ton of money. Doesn't matter. If you're running for the House seat, and you have $2 million on average, it doesn't matter what the other side is spending. Or it doesn't matter much. So if we have a robust campaign funding system, we won't need to curtail anyone's free speech. And what people will come to see if we have good disclosure laws and maybe a reform that requires all shareholder votes on all political expenditures, which I think would almost shut the whole thing down, people would begin to see that those independent ads, those are corrupt. That's self-interested money, and if they all had to be identified as this ad was paid for by the shareholders of Exxon, citizens would understand that's corrupt.
But they're not even citizens of the United States. Often you're talking about multinational companies.
Right.
You don't have problems with foreign companies donating to our campaigns.
Well, I suppose I suppose you could it's not American citizens that should be silencing, so I suppose you could do that, but it's really not going to change anything. It's really not going to, that's not going to end corporate influence on legislation, which is what our goal is, right? And our goal is to make sure that elections are fair, and so that incumbents who have access to all the special interest money don't always win. I mean, those are our goals, right? So, I don't want to attack at those branches that Larry's talking about. We have to attack the problem, and we should try to do it in a way that doesn't violate any of our other sacred principles.
Well, I think it's a misinterpretation of First Amendment. So, I mean, that's where there's just a substantive disagreement. You can say it's a branch and not a root, but I'm going to disagree with you.
Yeah, it's fine. You know, it's a disagreement's a beautiful thing. I think to find the consensus here, I think we can still solve the problems that we're both most concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're each free to go off and work as progressives or conservatives independently on other reforms.
Yeah, I just, that's where, I think we disagree a little bit, because I don't think the idea is to go off and work as conservatives and progressives. I think the idea is to try to be independent individuals.
Right. Well, yes, of course. Mm-hmm. And to think critically.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I just don't want to assume the posture.
Yeah.
It sets up a football game or a wrestling match right there. I mean, just, you're going to come as representing the Democrats or progressive instead of whoever you are as an individual.
Mm-hmm.
Because that person doesn't necessarily speak or represent the progressive.
Yeah. No,
I don't agree, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, if you try to get a bunch of progressives together to talk about, fair elections or Citizens United, you can't get them to agree.
Yeah. Well, labels, of course, are inadequate and crude instruments for understanding where people are coming from. But also,
mm-hmm.
in some ways, they do help us communicate. Maybe they can.
Yeah, I guess what I'm looking for, Stephen, is again, can we have something like just pure deliberation? I don't know if you read like
I think we've had some great pure deliberation right here. it's a coffee party moment.
Okay. All right. So now I want to ask you, for people who are interested in being part of the organization and want to, try to help you at the local level, like what can they do, Stephen?
Well, visit our website and sign up, rebuilddemocracy.org.
So what are they signing up for when they sign up? Like, what are you going to ask?
Well, here's some things that they can do. If they are involved with a local political organization, whether it's Coffee Party or Move On or the Tea Party, talk about these three issues within their own group and see if they would like to reach out to a group that's traditionally considered on the other side. So, if it is, assuming you're all Coffee Party supporters, would you be willing to reach out to some Tea Party supporters in your area, and maybe use the framework on that Living Rooms discussion site, and have some Living Room discussions with some Tea Party people and say, find out if there's common ground here, and if we find that these groups can agree, I'm perfectly happy to come out there and kind of help broker the deal, and maybe we can get some, coalitions set up around the country if some of your listeners will get active. If they have the ability to contribute financially, of course, we don't have any money. Frankly, we're not a true grassroots organization. No one is salaried.
Mm-hmm.
We need money to fly me around and help broker these deals, and then when we do launch, we're going to have to pay for advertising. Ultimately, what I want to get some yard signs that you'll be able to purchase on the site and put up on your lawns at election time that would drive people to the site.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are skilled at writing, or even if you're not, we can help you with some writing. We'd like more people to be writing on the site, publishing articles. I would love someday to have five columnists in a different column every day. How wonderful would that be?
Yeah.
So there's some things that we need to have done.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm just curious, about going back to the kind of the initial conversation topic about, the experiences we've had with transpartisan conversations and organizing. I mean, can you think of a really good example, successful kind of transpartisan organizing? Is there something that model that you hold up as like this is what can be done?
Well, I do feel like we're doing it here in New Hampshire. We had this really nice dinner. At first, it was really awkward and uncomfortable, and the host was very shrewd and hostess, and she we went around the table and talked about our lives from a very personal way, and then we actually found that even though we didn't agree, we liked each other. Even though we didn't necessarily disagree on a lot of things, and I remember there was a Tea Party guy at the table. He's our state chair, and a younger woman who was on the left, a more progressive oriented, sitting next to him, and when he finally said something, he was against GAFTA and Nat, she nearly jumped out of her chair and hugged him. And I think it's because she liked him, she knew his story, and she actually wanted to find something that she could agree with him on, just so she could make that connection. She didn't want to disagree with everything. So there is a formula there, and I think it does involve becoming friends again. Remember after the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln with malice towards none. I mean, what a, we in our generation we've gone through nothing like that.
Yeah.
And Lincoln's message was with malice towards none. To be friends again. We need to be friends again, Annabelle.
You want a Reconstruction era?
Well, that involves sending in the troops, so I don't know about that.
Oh, that's true. But yeah, no, I agree. There has to be some kind of reconciliation, and like awkward, subconscious they may be. Yeah, I agree that we need to deliberately have those kinds of conversations and break through the gridlock that we complain about in Washington, but it exists in our daily lives as well. The gridlock that inhibits us from talking to friends or family who disagree with us, who have called us names. And I hear about this all the time, like, I can't talk to my sister. She just called me a socialist, or, you know, she called me a racist or whatever, and you're not talking to each other. It's a part of our lives, and I really commend you for tackling it.
I think we have to agree not to impugn motives. You can never know what another person's motivation is, and you should never assume. And once you do that, you've crossed the line. So let's give everyone the benefit of the doubt in terms of their motivations. Conservatives care about the poor. We think the best way to help the poor is in a growing economy, which requires a dynamic free market system. You may disagree. You might think that a more distributive economy is better. We need a bigger safety net. That's fine. But we want the same things, and let's not suggest otherwise.
Well, I mean, that's a separate conversation, but I think area where we would have a lot to talk about is what exactly is free market right now. Is what we have really free market.
You're bringing us back to political reform. I agree with you. You're right.
So we should definitely have that conversation another time. I'm thrilled that you joined us, Stephen, and I'm really excited about the work you're doing, even though, you know, there are things that I kind of disagree with or I'm skeptical about here and there, but I want to see the results. I want to see the experiment, because we're all experimenting. No one really knows how we're going to get to real reform in this country. We're all just putting it out there and experimenting it. I love what you're doing. Love to have you back on. Further down the road, and just checked in with you, see how things are going, and I'm sure there'll be coffee party folks really excited about working with you. So I'll put you in touch. Okay.
Thanks, Annabelle. It was a real treat for me. I look forward to the next time.
Yeah. Thanks, Stephen.
All right. Cheers.
Okay. Bye. So tomorrow, you guys, I'm gonna have John Pfeffer on from Institute for Policy Studies, and we're gonna be talking about a military-industrial complex, the end of the Iraq War, possibility of conflict with Iran, other foreign policy issues. John knows a lot about Korea, North Korea, written a book about North Korea. So we could ask Kim all about Kim Jong-il's death and what he thinks of it. So it's going to be a great hour tomorrow at 5 p.m. with John Pfeffer. And then we're going to have on Thursday, another open call with Janine Loudon co-hosting and a bunch of great coffee party folks, and we can really talk about anything. And we hope for a lot of audience participation. And then next week, we're going to be talking to David Cobb of Move to Amend Coalition, and it's going to be a bit of a town hall where we're going to have some coffee party people and Move to Amend people really kind of talking about how we may work together going forward and learning more about that great coalition and all the great work they're doing right now. So there's a lot of shows coming up, and if you guys are interested in giving me suggestions or interested in volunteering or even programming, please email me. Okay, you can email me at enough@coffeepartyusa.com, enough@coffeepartyusa.com. And, so just, you know, let me know what you guys are thinking. Thanks for joining us, and let people know about the show. And feel free to call in, and make sure you press 1 if you want to get in the queue to talk. And I will talk to you guys tomorrow. I'll be back tomorrow. Okay, take care. Thank you.